What's going on, everyone? We are back for another Pledge podcast. Today, I have a new connection here. It's my new friend, Eddie. Me and Eddie just recently connected, actually, through Instagram. I was scrolling through some psilocybin-related posts, came across Eddie's timeline, and really fell in love with what he was talking about, really enjoyed what he had to say on his posts and his videos, and wanted to dive a little bit deeper into your story. So welcome to the show, man. Glad you could make it.
Thanks for having me, Lee. That's the great thing about social media. You know, sometimes we can get lost in it, but other times we can make great connections from all around the world. I'm all the way here from Toronto. And whereabouts are you again?
I'm all the way in North Carolina.
North Carolina. Charlotte. Yeah.
So yeah, happy so the double-edged sword of social media. For sure. Well, look, man, I want to kind of start off with a little background about yourself. If you can tell the listeners kind of where you're from and how your life kind of transitioned earlier on in the earlier phase of life. And then we'll kind of, you know, fast forward to now and talk about some of the amazing adventures you were telling me about a little bit and some of the things you got involved with. But if you don't mind kind of talking a little bit of, you know, where you come from, a little bit about your, you know, family background and a little bit about yourself in general.
Yeah, so my parents, they immigrated here from Southeast Asia. I'm a mix of Thai, Laotian, and Chinese. I was born here, actually, just 2.5 hours outside of Toronto in a very small town. And yeah, I grew up in Canada. And right off the bat, after I graduated from high school, I started into entrepreneurship right away. Young, ripe age of 19, I opened a restaurant. I gained a lot of experience working within my aunt's restaurants. They were a restaurateurs for many years, and I grew up in that industry and felt like I had all the tools I needed to open my own restaurant. So I dove deep into entrepreneurship right away, made a good living, very passionate about the work that I was doing. And that led me to open a nightclub, actually, when I was 23 years old.
Oh, wow.
So I had both businesses running simultaneously. And, you know, being young and full of energy, it was great. But as the years went on, I developed more stress, more chronic stress. I didn't really know how to manage it. Running myself down physically, mentally, emotionally. And that's where it all began. So strong, you know, financial foundation, but internally was suffering for quite some time. And I didn't even know it at that point.
Mm-hmm. When did you start realizing kind of the shift? You know, because I always hear, you know, a lot from people when, you know, when you are in those situations and money is good, sometimes it can be a while before, you know, the quote unquote side effects can catch up of other things that are going on below the surface. When did you start to realize a shift in, you know, your day to day or your mindset, or when did you start noticing that something wasn't quite right and something needed to change?
Yeah, I was, I'm thinking around like mid-20s, I started to just develop a lot of physical symptoms. I'd easily get sick over the winter months, bronchitis, pneumonia. I was breaking out as well in like acne, and I had low back pain. There was just all these symptoms I was experiencing, and I'm sure part of it was to do with my eating habits back in the day. And late nights, of course, you know, the restaurant industry and the nightclub industry calls for late nights, sometimes all nighters. So my sleep schedule was off. And the mental and emotional stress does take a toll. And I feel like my body was giving me signals that I was ignoring for quite some time. I'm not sure if you've ever experienced that before.
No, I definitely have.
Yeah. I feel like, our bodies are quite intelligent, and it was telling me something needed to change, something needed to budge, and I didn't know exactly what to do. So it led me on a journey of health and wellness. I hired a personal trainer to try to get, you know, physically fit, lose some of the weight that I gained, and see if I could fix some of my challenges. And I dove deep into alternative medicine, going to different practitioners. And it got me so far to the point where I kept a lot of the symptoms at bay. But then I realized along this journey, I was still not mentally and emotionally, I was stable, but that's not the word I was looking for. I was unhappy on a deeper level, you know, just on that underlying unhappiness, dissatisfaction, no matter how much I earned, no matter how, you know, far I advanced in my career. There was just this underlying feeling of not being enough, not feeling enough, and just not happy with what I was achieving.
Mm. So for the body aspect, when you started having those issues, do you think it was a mix between dietary and stress, a little bit of both?
Absolutely both. And I tested that out as well, because there were times when I would go really strict, like just pristine diet, rigid exercise routine. I had a personal trainer, someone to keep me accountable. But I did notice every time my stress levels would exceed, I don't even know what the threshold is, but when it was high, I would still break out. Mm. I would still feel fatigue. Fatigue was a big one. I was running on low energy, and that required me to, take stimulants. I wasn't a big coffee drinker, but I was taking caffeine pills quite often just to keep me stimulated. And being in the nightclub industry as well, you know, you get exposed to different drugs. So I had a small stint, thankfully, or small of cocaine. And it started off as like night use, but during the daytime when I need a little boost, like it did it. It kept me going. But at the same time, I didn't realize that my adrenals were dying.
Mm. So from the overwhelming stress then.
Yeah.
That fight or flight mode constantly.
So that proved that, anytime my stress levels were too high, I was in that fight or flight mode. I could not turn it off because I didn't have the tools. I still, would break out. I would still get tired, and then I would still get sick, even though my physical body was more in shape before. It was definitely, when I used to look at my body, I'm like, okay, you look great, great shape, but internally still struggled, not as bad as before, but still struggled. So the mind body connection is so strong.
What were some of the things, so you got the diet dialed in, what were some of the things you did to help with the stress? Because I know that's a big thing for people listening. I mean, that's one of the number one things that we see, especially here in the United States, especially is stress. What is one of the things that you implemented that helped you with that stress? What are some of the tools that came across before you got into plant medicines, but what were some of the things that helped you reduce that stress once you saw yourself passing that threshold, and what also helped you realize when your body was in those states?
Well, I dove into the world of biohacking for a couple of years. This is when I owned a gym. So just long story short, after I was with my personal trainer, he encouraged me to take some courses. And I then became a holistic health coach, a personal trainer. I opened a gym, and then I purchased a infrared sauna and also a hyperbaric oxygen chamber.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I got that from, do you know Dave Asprey by any chance?
I do.
Yeah, so I was really deep into his work for quite some time. I even spent two rounds at the BioCybernaut Institute, also known as 40 Years of Zen. That's Dave Asprey's take on it, but it's neurofeedback training where they hook up your brain to EEG, and they can measure whether you're in beta, like a stressful state, alpha, theta, and the tones that was fed back to our ears would help us identify when we were in these alpha states, which is a more relaxed state. Mm-hmm. And that cues the body to know how to get into alpha state. So I took that training, which helped quite a bit. And I also slept in the hyperbaric oxygen chamber two or three times out of the week. And that type of device just pushes the ambient oxygen into the blood stream, the muscles, just to help with recovery, increase alkalinity in the pH level. Because at that time, I was still getting sick quite often, you know, every season in the winter, coughs, colds, flus, bronchitis, pneumonia. And the last thing, I was really heavy into adaptogens as well. So I was taking reishi and tulsi, chaga, just doing all the things as much as possible to help reduce the amount of stress that I couldn't at that time get out of, just because, you know, I gave myself all these challenges as far as businesses, and I had to kind of maintain it. So I couldn't really escape it for that time. So I needed these tools.
When did you see the shift in the stress level? Was it a combination of all those tools, or was there a certain one that particularly worked more?
They all quite worked synergetically with each other. You know, the sauna helped with decrease in inflammation, the oxygenation of the hyperbaric oxygen chamber helped with alkalinity and speedy recovery. The herbs helped with reducing stress, but I did discover, you know, after a couple of years of doing that, that I was just using these devices and these herbs to bring me back to homeostasis, but I would not stay there because I didn't take care of the root problem, the root cause. So I knew that these external factors were definitely helpful, but if I wanted to make that ultimate transformation from within, I had to change something within. And at that point, I didn't know what it was. I knew I just had to reduce stress with work. And actually, something happened that was quite tragic. My brother passed away in 2016. He's 27 years old. Oh, wow. And that actually was a catalyst for me to let go of work completely. So I went on a 2.5 year sabbatical, close to 3 years without working, traveled the world, and participated in, I was taught, I did immersions in yoga, meditation, I lived in temples, you know, took breathwork immersions. I actually went down to Peru as well to do ayahuasca. And then I ended up getting hired on as a facilitator just because of the training I had in health coaching.
So that's where we get to the merge of, you know, you were getting the physical part down, you know, the diet, the exercise, you know, that was firing there, but still unbalanced. You got the mental and some of the stress. That was kind of a back and forth, in and out of homeostasis, like you said. And now, especially with that event that happened, it sounds like it's really getting down to the root cause, like you said earlier, is that emotional and deeper rooted health that a lot of us talk about but can't always seem to put our finger on sometimes.
That's correct. And I wanted to just rewind back a bit as well. When I was taking the medicinal mushrooms at that point, I was actually microdosing as well. Microdosing with psilocybin, with LSD as well. And I even tried DMT. So I had a couple years of my life that I was microdosing and experimenting. And that kind of helped keep things at bay as well. But it wasn't until my brother passed and I went on the sabbatical and I realized that, okay, I have no stress now, nothing to worry about at all. But then what was left was this lingering feeling of unhappiness again, a bit of grief from my brother's passing, lack of motivation and just no sense of direction, because I knew that I could not go back to that lifestyle again. And that was my identity. And I didn't know what else I could do moving forth. So I was having a bit of a crisis while I was traveling. I actually broke down one time. I was in Bali. I called my parents, my sister, and I just was crying on the phone. I told them, I don't know what is wrong with me. I can't kick this feeling of, it just felt like a low-grade depression.
I definitely resonate, man. I've been in that before myself. So it's really hard to always put to words too. And especially sharing that with someone else, you know, because half the time, depending on who you're talking to, whether it's your friends or family or people that know you, you know, sometimes people are always going to recommend that you may need help, or they're not always going to, you know, understand or empathize because they may have not been there before. It can be a really lonely feeling to be in that place, you know, especially when, like you mentioned, your energy is low, your motivation's low. And then you had that on, you know, with your brother on top of that, man. So that's a combination for, you know, a lot of things to really not only cause stress, but to cause this overwhelming feeling of, you know, shutting down almost, you know? And so I definitely resonate with that a lot, man, because I empathize with what you're saying because I've felt those things before. So it sounds like, though, you were kind of experimenting with psychedelics before, you know, the sabbatical. Was that kind of part of the whole biohacking thing? Is that where you came across psychedelics in general?
That's correct. Yes. I was, I forget what I heard. It's probably a podcast or a YouTube video with Tim Ferriss. He was speaking about many, you know, CEOs and people in Silicon Valley microdosing with LSD, with psilocybin. And that's what really intrigued me. And I got into nootropics as well. But yeah, it started before my brother's passing. And I do say, like, it did help, but it wasn't the magic bullet. Like, it didn't cure anything, sure, so to say.
When did the shift occur for you? You know, I know you, like you said, when that happened, it was a catalyst for you to go out and do some of the deeper work, which again, even with psychedelics are a catalyst as well. I'm glad you mentioned that because a lot of people now, you know, even especially around psilocybin, because it's becoming so popularized, you know, it's either a performance enhancer or the silver bullet to help with mental health. And really, it's the furthest thing from that. You know, a lot of times it's going to show us things that sometimes we may not even be ready to see ourselves. So it's something that has a lot of work to do around it itself and isn't something that magically is a cure-all. But given the situation you're in now and the work that you're doing now, can you put a finger on when was that shift? Was it a point in your sabbatical where something just clicked, or what really changed that energy and the thought process and the momentum that you had within yourself, especially about how you felt, you know, just feeling stuck and not being able to get out of that? What helped you shake that? I think that'd be helpful for people to hear.
That's a great question, Lee. I remember that time vividly. I was in Peru. At this time, I was on my break because I was facilitating as well. And on my break, I decided to do my own retreat at a different facility. It was a 3-week immersion. I did close to 24 ceremonies. And midway through, I was speaking to one of the facilitators who was there. He's been there close to 7 years. And he's done, I'm pretty sure he said over 100 ceremonies. So I started to question him as well. I started to question to see how his relationship was with his family, how he was feeling. And he said that, you know, he's still doing the work. He's still going through the dark night of the soul, doing the shadow work. And he doesn't have the best relationship with his parents. They don't even agree with him being there. So they don't speak as much. And I thought to myself, after, you know, half a decade of working with ayahuasca, of plant medicine, how come he hasn't made any significant, I'm sure he's made significant changes, but how come, you know, this relationship with his parents and some of the issues he's been dealing with he hasn't resolved. And that kind of scared me. I'm like, I've only started this journey. I've done, you know, maybe 15 ceremonies at this time, like really deep dives with ayahuasca. And I said, I don't have the capacity to do this for another 5, 6, 7, 8 years. This is just not possible for me. Because I was already feeling quite down and I couldn't go any deeper. Like you said, it brought up stuff that I, at that time, you know, wasn't ready to see. But looking back, I, of course, you know, I'm still here and I look back and I congratulate myself for having that strength. But it was a lot. It revealed a lot about myself. It helped me to kind of reflect back on all my choices in my 20s and how it's led me to where I am today. And there's a lot of regret that I've experienced, a lot of anger at myself, at the world, at my parents, a lot of blame. And when those types of emotions come up, you know, it's not always that easy to transform them and to clear them out. So thankfully, when I was traveling, I was, you know, leaning into yoga and meditation and Qigong, and I was seeing different healers and therapists wherever I went, all across, you know, Southeast Asia, Bali, and Peru. And it did really help me. It helped me gain enough strength to continue this journey. But the underlying, you know, depression was still there. And it wasn't until I got home from Peru, I finished my work experience there and came back feeling quite depleted, you know, holding space and facilitating for people's pain and suffering while working through my own is, it's, it's a lot.
Especially if you're an empath, which I you probably are. And so, you know, absorbing that energy.
Yes, that I didn't know how to create my boundaries. And you're absolutely right. I was absorbing that energy. I brought it back with me. And I got kind of scared. I didn't think I would make it, meaning that I went down that mental path of suicide ideation. Mm. So what I did was I checked myself into a Vipassana. Because I'm all about the, you know, the natural alternative methods.
What is that?
Vipassana is a 10-day silent meditation. So it's 10 days, an hour of meditation with a group and on your own in complete silence, no journaling, no reading, and eye gazes down so we don't even look at each other. And I was in silence for 10 days. And when I drove back, this was done in Quebec. Vipassana Quebec. I drove back home and that was probably the best I felt ever, you know, since my brother's passing. Very clear, very at peace. And when I got back home, I continued my meditation practice for a couple more weeks. And at this point, I felt more at peace, but I felt unmotivated. I didn't have a purpose. I didn't have any passions. I didn't want to go back to my old ways. And I didn't know the direction I wanted to go. So this led me down another dark path of suicide ideation. So I really actually explored it deeper. I went down that hole to the point where I got very frightened and I was close to taking my own life. But there was an internal voice that kicked in and told me just to tell at least someone, because I was being quite silent. On the surface, you know, coming back from the meditation, you also want to show that, you know, you didn't do it for nothing. So I was very at peace with my parents, around my parents, my friends. And I wasn't faking. I was at peace, but there was also that passion and that life force energy that was missing. I was just in apathy.
Which, coming from a person like yourself that was so involved in, you know, so many different ventures, and even if they didn't fully align with your soul, you were someone that was constantly doing something, you know, pushing yourself in a way. So it sounds like it's kind of at that crossroads now where it's like you did the work, you know, the full spectrum, you know, from meditation to therapies, to shamans, to, you know, the whole nine. But now it got to the point, like you said, where now what do I do? You know, what is that kind of, you know, and again, another thing I'm really deeply resonating with you on, both the dark path of suicidal thoughts and that hopeless, lost feeling of not really being able to know what it is that you're supposed to be doing, you know, and then especially after, you know, coming from yourself, you know, I'm sure you have done all those things, right? And so it's like you had done so much and like, well now what do I do? What is it that really aligns with who I am now, and how do I tap into that? And so what does that look like? You know, what, when you reached out to someone, when you kind of got into that, you know, fell into the darkness again a little bit, who did you reach out to? What did that conversation look like? And then what propelled you into doing the work you're doing now, or whatever led you to, you know, what you were doing then?
Yeah. So the first person I told was, one of my best friends, my soul brother, Colin. I told him, and then I told my sister, and then my parents. And right after that, I told my uncle, and he gifted me a book that really helped him. So this was a catalyst as well. It's called Dynamic Thought. It's by Henry Hamlin Thomas, I believe. Dynamic Thought. And Dynamic Thought is about reprogramming your subconscious mind. So creating different beliefs that you want to embody. And this is stuff I already knew in the past, but this book really just nailed it in for me. It was written ages ago, and I think that's what did it. It was such an old book with such great wisdom. And I read that book, and with the combination of reading that book and speaking to my parents and my sister and my friend, who all, thankfully, because I know it doesn't happen for a lot of people, for some people, but they all supported me. So I feel like I felt like I was not alone anymore. Before, I was holding on to these emotions myself, thinking that I could get through it with by myself or with my coaches. But what I really needed was the support from my blood family first and my closest friends. So speaking about it alone really helped. And this book really catapulted me into the next chapter of my life. So it prompted me to figure out what it is that I actually wanted and not wanted. And I knew at that point I did not want to be in London, Ontario. That's where I was living at first. I just wanted to experience something different. But what was holding me back was my mom. She was really tethered to me. I love her to death, but she, you know, she really played that victim card very well. So when I requested or asked her for permission to move to like a bigger city to meet new people, to be around more conscious people, because there is a lot of diversity in Toronto here where I live now. And I also wanted to meet, you know, my future partner. I felt like the small town, I knew everybody and nothing was really going for me there. And a lot of the old memories were there because that's where I opened my nightclub. That's where my restaurant was. And I was living in the same home for over a decade. And I had a conversation with my mom, and I found the strength and the courage to do what was best for me, follow my heart's desire, and that was to move. So she cried and made a big deal about it, but I knew that she would get over it, and I reassured her that I'm not leaving her or has nothing to do with her. It's just I needed to follow my heart's desire. And I moved to Toronto, and I didn't know what I was going to do for work, but I also knew that I had this surge of energy being in the big city, so many opportunities. So I found a place in Toronto, and I decided to just experiment. I have so many skills and tools and modalities under my belt with neurofeedback and biofeedback training, Thai massage, teaching yoga. So I just started doing private sessions out of my own home. And within a year, I developed a strong client base. And I think I'm in year two. Yeah, 2019. Oh, we're in 2021 now. So it's been a couple years. I've developed a strong clientele. I've been quite booked up, and my practice keeps evolving. I just dial in and sense in to see what my client needs, and it's different for everyone. Sometimes it's a Thai massage, which I call holistic body work, because it can or incorporate breath work, incorporate a mental and emotional coaching. And I'm even doing psilocybin ceremonies, private sessions, group sessions. So taking all the knowledge I've learned over 3 years and applying it for my clients.
Oh, wow.
And that's where I'm at now. And it's really filling my soul just to be of service and to see the transformations, to help people fast track their progression, because I've made the mistakes myself. And now I can come at it from a place of embodiment and experience.
Wow. So you moved there and had no idea what you were going to do, had no connections, no anything there. What was the first step? You know, you found a place to live and all that, obviously. How did you first start gaining traction in clientele, or where did you even get the idea of starting to do some of that? You know, obviously being an entrepreneur since the time you were young, definitely probably didn't want to work for anybody. So, you know, what was the first step and how did you start transitioning? What did that look like?
Yeah. Actually, a funny thing is when I moved here, I was applying to different places. But that didn't work out. You know, I felt like when I wrote my resume out and it didn't work out, and everything happens for a reason. I feel like for some people, they may have seen me to be overqualified because I had a lot of great experience. So I was wondering why I was not getting hired. But it was a blessing, because then that prompted me to connect with a business coach. She's actually a good friend of mine. And she kind of just helped me keep myself accountable, because I kind of knew the ins and outs. I knew a little bit about marketing from owning a gym and a nightclub, but I just needed that extra kick, that extra push. And also for her to reflect back to me my capabilities. Because sometimes, you know, when you've been out of it for such a long time, a coach is just what is needed to help you, you know, just kick you in the butt a little bit.
And that helped you kind of realize that you had all the tools that you needed then. You had the experience, you had, you know, the background, and you just hit the ground running from there.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, just started experimenting with friends and family, you know, $30 a session for an hour session. One of my first clients actually was my partner. He's my partner currently. And I taught like a private yoga lesson for him, and we started talking. But it's developed quite a bit, and word spreads fast, you know, when you're providing good service, giving people your complete attention and presence, word spreads fast, and it's led me into a great place. And even over the pandemic as well, in March. At this time I wasn't doing psychedelics for quite some time, and a friend gifted me, I'm not sure if you've heard the strain albino penis envy.
I have.
Yeah, it's pretty powerful, very potent. So I had it with me, and in March, I felt a little bit stuck. Just with the lockdown, I wasn't able to practice. So I did a big dose of mushrooms for the first time in quite some time, and it shot me back into ayahuasca days. It actually felt like an ayahuasca ceremony.
Mm.
Yeah, and I got a lot of insights from it. And the different part was that because I took a long time to integrate and take the action steps of what my heart and soul needed to do in order to progress, like in this physical reality, I was able to take the insights from that ceremony in March of 2020 and implement it almost right away. I wrote it down, And there's only a few, you know, easy steps that I need to take, but that was really what sealed the deal. I wrote it down and I made sure that I kept myself accountable. And that led me to where I am today. I'm doing a lot of online work, a lot of online breath work, meditation journeys, where I develop, you know, trust with many people. And that leads into more clients for the one-on-one private psilocybin ceremony and also the group ceremonies as well.
Wow, that's awesome, man. What did the mushrooms, what obviously that was a big catalyst there. What were the insights outside of work? You know, what were you kind of gifted with in that last or in that experience?
Mm-hmm. So two main things. Internally, to just give myself a break. Yeah, so this opportunity that we had, a 3-month lockdown, it showed me this opportunity as just like a gift to just pause. Because in the past, I didn't know how to pause. Just to pause and recalibrate and, you know, get creative without having to press a button quite yet. Just let things simmer below the surface. Let the ingredients marinate a little bit. So I allowed that to happen. And with the other part, it was quite big. It was more regarding my property in London, Ontario. You know, I lost my tenants after a couple months. And so I didn't have that income, passive income coming in from my income properties. And that was just as simple as putting it back on the market. Because sometimes when one is in a stressful state, the answers are quite simple, but they're not that clear. So that was all I had to do. Just take a break, take a pause, put my place on the market, and eventually got lease, you know, midsummer. And during that lockdown, I just really had a good chance to reconnect with myself and how I want to show back up for my clients when I came back to work. So in that time frame, I spent a lot of time practicing my main modalities. So breath work, meditation. I learned how to give blessings as well from my teacher. His name is, he's a Qigong and Master Shaw, also a medical doctor, really amazing human being. So I was giving myself blessings, my organs, my health, my home, just gratitude to life, to everything that I have. And when we were able to work again, the floodgates just opened. I guess at that point, people just wanted, you know, human touch and healing and connection. So I got busy right away when the doors are open, and it's been like that ever since.
That's awesome, man. What does your day to day look like now as far as your routine? If you can shed a little light into that, I'm sure people listening, and I'm curious myself, what is your like kind of regimen, if you have one, as far as like diet, breath work, plant medicines, meditation, like what is your, you know, schedule, so to speak?
For sure. I feel like nowadays I have the most ideal balance of work and play and life. Just like in the past, in 2019 and 2020, I was taking quite a bit of in-person clients, but that did, you know, wear me down. Doing body work, it gets exhausting, you know, physically, even mentally, emotionally. And it really helped me clarify what is important. So nowadays, I wake up, I would say 5 to 6 days out of the week, I am doing breath work at least once a day, at least 20 minutes a day. If I'm not doing breath work, I'm doing a guided meditation. I am a practitioner of HemiSync. So I've done the entire Gateway experience, which is a profound meditation experience that I recommend for everybody. And I take two. Sorry, go ahead.
HemiSync?
Yes, HemiSync. It's with the Robert Monroe. He's a creator, and they have many guided meditations, but the Gateway Experience is by far one of my favorite. And it's a meditation course. So it gets you really deep into altered states of consciousness just through, you know, the binaural sounds that is played, the type of meditation that is guided. And I completed that course. So I did meditation that's about 30 minutes a day. And then currently I do breath work, cold showers. I max myself out with two in-person clients a day and one Zoom call a day for one-on-one sessions. Every Sunday I host breathwork meditation. It's called Soul Journey, and that's been going very well. And last year, starting in September, on a weekly basis, every Saturday I was hosting group psilocybin ceremonies. We recently, just last month, got into a stricter lockdown, so I paused the group ceremonies for a little bit. And now, starting this Sunday, I will be hosting, it's called Vitality. It's a 12-day mind-body kickstart. So each morning, I have a small group of people who are logged on to Zoom, and I'm leading them through breathwork and the five Tibetan rites, which is a series of yoga asanas, some classic ones, some that I, you know, designed and gathered myself from other teachers. And I'm just keeping people accountable and leading these classes in the morning. We are intermittent fasting as well. So that's something I practice quite often, which is eating in an 8-hour, sometimes even smaller window. Have you tried intermittent fasting?
I have. I love it.
Yeah, I find it to be profound for my health. Just more energy, more clarity.
Do you do any type of particular food regimen? Is your, you know, what does your food look like?
I would say 80-20. So 80% pretty healthy whole foods. I eat, my dad's a hunter, so I always have fresh caught venison. Well, frozen now, venison. My mom, she works at a farm, so she gets me free-range chicken. And then I eat a lot of produce and vegetables and smoothies. And I also have a sweet tooth as well. So, you know, on the weekends or here and there, I spoil myself with some treats.
Sure. What about in terms of, I mean, I'm just fascinated, man. I mean, it sounds like you're firing on all cylinders. And I think that's what we all aspire to be, is to find that balance, right, in the physical, the emotional, the mental, and as you mentioned, the play too. You know, it's this weird paradox that it's very serious and not so serious all at the same time. So it's finding that sweet spot and slowing down the pendulum swing, you know, so to speak. What does breath work look like for you? I'm definitely interested in some of the things you're hosting and would definitely be in contact more. You know, you hear breath work a lot. What does the specific practices look like for you, and you know, what do you teach and things like that?
Mm-hmm. So the background that I was first introduced to, there's three of them. Wim Hof method, I'm sure you've heard.
Mm-hmm.
There's also holotropic breathing.
I tried that for the first time probably a few weeks ago. That's mm-hmm. like a slight psychedelic experience.
Yeah. So my type of breathwork gives quite a similar experience. So it combines elements of like Wim Hof, of holotropic breathing, and then Kumbhaka breath hold, something I learned in Mexico when I was doing a yoga immersion. So I infuse this breath work modality that I created, you know, stemming from different practitioners. And I have a really incredible musical score that we breathe with. And then I infuse binaural beats in there as well. I got it with my voice. And like you said, it just gets people into an altered state of consciousness where the mind turns off and emotions below the surface is able to come to the surface to get acknowledged and to get released. Mm-hmm. So many people, they have profound results as far as releases of anger and sadness and tears, especially, you know, people doing it for the first time. They're getting into an altered state where there's colors and visions that's flowing through without having to take any substance. So it's very powerful, especially for people who are not too inclined, or they're a little bit fearful to do like a deep dive psilocybin ceremony. I always recommend them to do breath work first, just to get a little taste, because with breath work, you know, you stop and you can come out of it in a matter of minutes. But as we both know, with psychedelics, once you're in, you are in for the long run.
And no turn, you can't get the refund when the starts. For sure. What is, you said Kumbhaka? What is, I've never heard of that.
I can guide you. Yeah. Kumbhaka is a breath retention after the exhale. So typically with my breath work, it's a big inhale through the mouth because we want to oxygenate the body as much as possible. So the inhales through the mouth. So the mouth is wide open. You take that breath to fill the belly, fill the lungs, and then you just let it go. So there's no forceful exhale. It's just a... Okay. So we do about 6 to 7 to 8 minutes of that type of breathing. And then I guide it to bring that breath into the belly. And then we do a long, slow exhale. And then I say Kumbhaka, and that's where you retain the breath. So you hold the breath. Usually it's anywhere from a minute to 2 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah. And then people, they'll surprise themselves because they'll start off holding for 20 seconds. And then the next round, they'll build themselves up to a minute, then a minute and a half. Because these Kumbhakas, they build mental and emotional resilience. Because when we hold our breath, like we're underwater, the fight or flight response kicks in. Mm-hmm. But as you do this multiple times, you start to train the mind that you are okay. So you can turn off that stress response and hold that breath a little bit longer. Yeah.
It's different from like the Wim Hof or the others, because it's not as forced on the release, so to speak.
I would say it's most similar to Wim Hof. Yeah, it's most similar to Wim Hof, but people seem to say it gives them a different feel or experience. I'm not sure if it's because I infuse the binaural beats or I lead them through like a meditation with brain harmonization in the beginning, or I'm not sure, but they say the people who have done Wim Hof before, they say it's a different experience. They can get deeper. I think I know why. Because in the end, after they come out of the breath work, I lead a meditation, for example, inner child work. I'll safely establish a connection to people's inner child, where they can meet their inner child and empathize with their inner child and see what they're needing, whether it's love or compassion or connection or just to be acknowledged. And many times people will burst in tears because they haven't connected with their inner child or nurtured their inner child, let alone knowing they have that ability to nurture themselves.
Well, tell us a little bit about that. I mean, I'm interested for myself. Yeah. What does that look like? Because I think I've tried before and I haven't been very successful in that.
Yeah. I think the reason why my inner child breath works are successful is we do the breathing to turn off the mind, to get into that altered state of consciousness where we're in this deep alpha state. So just a very meditative, relaxed state. And it's kind of hypnotic as well. So this is where one is able to receive their own downloads, but they're more susceptible to, you know, the words coming through. So I guide them, the participants, into their mind. And there's a process that I use. And, you know, speaking it out loud just like this, it doesn't have that much of an impact. But when you're in it, it really does. But, you know, I count it down with footsteps like 10, 9, 8. It's very hypnotic. You open the door, you step into that time frame between the age of 0 and 7, a memory that really sticks out where your inner child is very traumatic. Or traumatized or something happened. And then we acknowledge that scene like they're watching a movie. And when you're in a really deep, really relaxed state, it's very vivid and you really feel what's happening as well. I've experienced myself, of course, because I've done it, but even the participants. And then once They empathize with inner child. They push away the background scenery where it's just a blank space. It's them, present day self, with their inner child. They get down at their knees, look at their inner child in the eyes, and then I guide a few prompts, and then they just spend literally 5-10 minutes. And then everything just happens organically of whatever their inner child needs.
Wow. What about, because for me, I have trouble remembering a lot of my childhood, and you know, I know traumas can vary, right? Even our birth process is traumatic, especially with our modern day setup. But there's times where, I mean, if anything, my parents were overly loving, you know? So it's like, I struggle to really remember things in that time frame. And I think a lot of it, yeah, a lot of what stemmed from myself is I was always running from my own mind. And you know, I got picked on and stuff a lot in school, even though I played sports and had good grades and on the outside appeared normal. But, you know, I had my quirks and I was diagnosed with OCD at an early age. And that, you know, we can talk about that some other time. But it's, I have a real hard time remembering those years and really a lot of my childhood in general. Have you come, is that something that's common you've come across, or what can help with that?
Yeah, it's different for everyone. But for example, you mentioned like getting teased and picked on by the kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a memory that could come through. So we really would connect you to that time frame so that you can empathize with what your inner child is experiencing. And basically, you're going in there and retrieving him and giving him, you know, exactly what he needs, whether it's compassion or acknowledgement. Or a sense of calm. And sometimes, you know, there's people who don't have a traumatic experience, or they don't connect to a time that was difficult, and they just really connect with the younger version of themselves, and they find themselves just dancing and, you know, or just hugging their inner child just for no reason, but to connect deeply with themselves.
Well, we're definitely going to have to talk more about that, man. So we'll have to take you up on some of these sessions and dive into that, because it's something I've struggled with on my own, and it's something I've really wanted answers around, and, you know, I've never really quite got there yet with that piece. And I've always felt there's something, you know, there, that's where that kind of root is. That's where that something's there, you know.
Right, yeah.
So,
and sometimes breath work alone, especially a long session, it'll bring an old memory, whether it's from your childhood or teenage years or absolutely anything, to the surface without you even knowing. So it'll unlock an old memory. I did a breath work myself last night. It was an hour, and midway through, or a little bit longer, I was bawling and started crying. It connected me to that dark place I was in that I just shared to you about being in that suicidal state, almost giving up on myself. And I had no clue that that memory was still lodged in my psyche. And, you know, people don't realize that these old memories, they do play a profound role in how we act and how we feel and how we navigate ourselves throughout present day.
So is the main thing then about gaining, kind of seeing it, you know, through breath and through meditation? And then is the biggest thing, and that I think I've heard before, is releasing that, like finding that moment, you know, that memory, right, that may be hidden somewhere, seeing it, feeling it, and then releasing it. Is that?
Absolutely. Yes. Okay. Yeah, releasing it. And oftentimes, if it's not guided and people don't know that that is happening, it wouldn't get released. They just may get shocked or traumatically.
Like a loop.
Yeah, it might loop again. But the fact that a facilitator is telling them that this could happen, that these memories could come through, but to feel good about it, actually, that it's coming to the surface to get released, and giving it, sending it off with lots of love and compassion, as opposed to suppressing it back in. You know, a good facilitator will facilitate that, not during the breath work, but prior, you know, giving the basic rundown of this is what could happen. There could be a lot of tears and emotions that come through. And this is a beautiful thing because, as we both know, we're not always encouraged in society, especially in the corporate world, to show our emotions, and because it's deemed as weakness.
That's very true, you know, and then we categorize that through sexes and, you know, like you said, environments and all these things. And because for me as a kid, I would cry pretty easily. I believe I had a lot of gifts or have a lot of gifts, and I didn't really know how to harness those. I had no idea how to even, you know, make sense of them, but I was very empathic from a early age. And I would cry very easily. And so I got picked on a lot for that, right? Especially being a young boy, right? And never really so much for my parents, my dad wasn't a very typically like masculine man in the traditional definition. But that drove me to the opposite of anger and, you know, fighting and, you know, just, you know, so much built up rage. Cause I almost felt like I had to carry that certain facade. So that way, if, you know, if I did shed a tear, it was like because I was angry, or you know, people were more prone not to pick on me than if they knew that I would, you know, had a temper or something like that. But that definitely was a big part for me, because and something I've over the last years revisited and things, and because even as a man, I've always been very balanced in my masculine and feminine and connected with my emotions. And I think that's what we've got to get out of society, is trying to make all these things so black and white, right? And I mean, the rabbit hole goes deep with those things, but it's something we've got to look at and realize that it's not, you know, it's not something as simple as, you know, men don't cry and women can, you know, like our society makes it out to be at times. And so, yeah, I mean, that's something I've gotten better here in the last few years of revisiting and releasing and re-acknowledging, because we're like mental hoarders, right? It's like we hoard these emotions and thoughts, and it's like no different than physically hoarding. Eventually, I mean, your house gets messy as shit, you know, you got stuff piled to the roof, and you know, you're on one of these television shows talking about how dirty and strange your house is. And that's how our minds and our psyches are, I believe, and we don't see it because it's not in the physical, but I think we very much feel that, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And what I learned when I studied neurofeedback and biofeedback, that a lot of our physiological challenges and issues that we experience stem from the unseen world, but stems from the mental, emotional world. And eventually when that mess that we can't see adds up to the point where our hearts and minds can't take anymore, then it starts to manifest itself into physical dis-ease. Mm. So you're absolutely right. And even with the masculine and the feminine energies, every human embodies both energies, and it's just a matter of bringing them back to harmony. Mm. Just because we're, you know, biologically male or female, it doesn't mean that we have to are supposed to only carry a certain amount of traits.
Agreed. I think,
yeah, that was where, you know, society has gotten it all wrong.
Sure. No, I definitely agree with that. And it's something that we don't nearly talk enough about. And, you know, and speaking about some of the unseen, where does spirituality kind of play in for you, if you don't mind me asking, you know, going through so many different experiences with psychedelics and plant medicines and, you know, and traveling and doing different things, where does that tie in? Cause I know you mentioned things happen for a reason. What does that kind of look like for you?
Yeah. As far as spirituality, but first I'll speak on the topic of like different dimensions. Once I did the DMT experience, it kind of like affirmed that there are different realities beyond what we see with our eyes. So that experience really connected me with, I would say, the spiritual realms. And as far as spirituality, I like to keep it really simple because I do teach and I share spirituality and my practices to a wide audience. And a lot of the people who connect with my material connect with it because it's quite relatable. So spirit to me is the pure vibration of love, peace, and harmony. So if people want to connect with that essence, I get them to close their eyes, repeat love, peace, and harmony until they start to feel that essence, that energy in their body. So that's the pure vibration of spirit. And that's as simple as it gets. So I dedicate my entire life to spirit. So my life is dedicated to love, peace, and harmony. And I dedicate to my personal, and I give back to the world, spirit. I give back to the world love, peace, and harmony. So I just continue this cycle and I keep it really, really simple. And every intention, every treatment that I give, I always lead with spirit. I always lead with love, peace, and harmony.
Yeah, I love that. And as people, right, we try to overcomplicate, and then that's when we get into war and debate and hate and separation, as we all claim to have the answers, but it can really just be as simple as you outlined it. That's why I like hermetic philosophy. You know, it ties into a lot of what you just said, you know, law of attraction and, you know, as above, so below, and things like that. So it's no, like you just mentioned, no different than what you give is what you receive. So when we don't overcomplicate things as much and can look at it, I think that's the paradox with life, is that life is supposed to be really, really simple, I believe. And, you know, obviously our society is set up differently by the wrong minds and the wrong souls. And again, it's probably by some divine design or something. But we should be living a lot simpler. And I think it all begins within ourselves, as you've highlighted here in our conversation.
Yeah, I'm on board with you with that 100%. Society and even our own minds always want to complicate everything, make everything extremely complex. And even science, you know, science is great, but science is always evolving. It's like we can never catch up. And with spirituality, I dove deep into many spiritual practices, and even myself, I was born and raised Catholic and my dad is Buddhist. So I have two religions that was influenced in me growing up. And then I dove deep into, you know, like yogic philosophy, which stems from Hinduism, which is very close with Buddhism. And also with shamanic practices. And the golden thread that is weaved through all these religious practices and spirituality is unconditional love and unconditional forgiveness. Mm. So I like to simplify it even more for you know, my audience who are listening in, and even for my clients. And to me, that is what spirituality is: unconditional love, unconditional forgiveness, and just leading life with love, peace, and harmony.
And that starts with ourselves, right? You know, we got to love and forgive ourselves, which is oddly sometimes the hardest, and we can be very self-sabotaging. It's a really strange dynamic at times. And so, you know, it's one of those things. And, you know, for the people listening, what do you recommend if people are kind of in that place that you found yourself in, or they're in that place where they're not loving themselves, or, you know, they're just at wit's end and they're ready to throw their hands up, and they, you know, may not be as successful on the business side of things and may not have as many options there. What could people do that you would recommend as a first step? I think that's helpful for people listening.
Reaching out to a community, I think, is very important, just so that they don't feel like they're alone, because there's a lot of people out there who are struggling. And it's typically when people isolate themselves is when they get into that deeper hole. So that's what I did. I isolated myself. I didn't share my experiences, what I was going through. And I would recommend people to just reach out to other people. And if they can't find that group, just continue, and people will show up for them, for sure. The other thing I would highly recommend is to take on a practice, whether it's meditative practice, breath work, something to, for lack of better words, to get obsessed about. Because if we don't, we're going to get obsessed and addicted to other things, such as alcohol or overeating or, you know, too much sex or relationship after relationship, and, you know, all those habits that are not serving our highest purpose. So take on a practice that can benefit the mind, can benefit the body, even though, because even for me, I knew I was using my fitness practice and my yoga practice to mask something, but at least it was benefiting my mental health and my body a little bit. I was aware that it wasn't the end all be all, but it was actually, it was not getting me into trouble, if that makes sense.
Oh, it definitely does.
Yeah. And then the other part is, if they haven't, I would recommend reading Dynamic Thought. It really helped me fine tune and get very clear on exactly what I needed to do. So I have 12 belief points that I really filter through my entire life. Like every decision I have to make, I have 12 belief points anytime my mind is wandering. And I'd be happy to share some of them for you as well.
I'd love to hear some.
So the first one is regarding self-worth. I'm worthy of the best that love and life have to offer. So anytime I make a decision, I have an important decision to make, I make sure that that decision is worthy of the best that love and life has to offer me. If it is, that's the decision I will make. And sometimes I will decide to take the other option because there's a lesson that I still need to learn, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The other one is if I catch myself ruminating over, you know, thoughts, or I'm hard on myself, there's another belief point I use. It's called the bonding belief point. I forgive myself and others for all the wrongs done to me, and I take responsibility for my own life. So all these words here are very important because no one's going to do this forgiveness practice for me. No one's going to nurture me. They can nurture me, but it's still an external, you know, factor, so it's temporary. But I know that I have this power to nurture myself, to forgive myself every time my mind wants to take me on a whirlwind. And also, of course, unconditional forgiveness for others as well. And when I continue to do that, then I know who I am. And the next belief point is I know who I am when I love myself unconditionally. And I always remind myself all parts of myself, not just the parts that are, you know, my strengths, also my weaknesses, also the parts of myself that aren't fully healed, especially those parts. Mm-hmm. So I know who I am when I love myself unconditionally. And when I get in a headspace where I'm not feeling grateful for what I have, or like even with what's going on, you know, we're in lockdown. There's a lot of things I don't agree with during this weird time that we're in. But at the same time, I have a lot to be grateful for. So I'm content and blessed to be me. So I may spend a day saying out that belief or that mantra, I'm content and blessed to be me. I have a wonderful partner. I have food on my table. I'm able to go outside and go for a walk, get fresh air. Even though, you know, we're not allowed to gather in big crowds, at least I can get fresh air. So it's a perspective change because my guiding force now is my body. I want to feel ease and grace in my body. I want to feel inner peace. I want to feel love, and whatever that takes, that's what I'm going to follow. And sometimes it's just a matter of shifting my perspective on what is going on. And there, those are just a few, but I have quite a few that I've stored in my mental log.
Are those ones you just made over time?
Yes. So some I've collected from, you know, other people. Some I made myself. It just evolved over time. And it's just really helped me. And when I have, or when I do create like a belief, I don't just recite it. I make sure I take action on it. I meditate over it. I use it in every situation. How can I forgive myself? You know, if I am struggling, I'll find a way. I just keep asking the questions, like, how can I love this part of myself? Do I need to talk to someone? Do I need to read a book? I'll figure out a way to get myself aligned back to this belief.
Mm. Yeah. That's super important, especially like you mentioned too. It's not just saying the words, it's feeling into it. It's actually creating that connection between the emotion and how you feel when you say those things, and not just saying, you know, I am grateful, I'm grateful, I'm grateful. It's actually feeling that emotion. I know, you know, like Joe Dispenza, he talks a lot about that. And that, I mean, that's the beauty with all these things, right? And we're all talking about the same thing. And sometimes it just takes a certain way of hearing it for it to click. And I think that's what's great about so many people serving in so many different ways. And that's recently was getting me over my hump and trying to help people more. And, you know, cause I used to beat myself up like, oh, I don't have anything to offer. Who am I to try to help if I'm still helping myself? But we're all always continuing, you know, to help ourselves. It's an ongoing thing. And so it's our responsibility. I almost feel like once you have that information to share it, because, you know, somebody may be listening to this and like, oh, I didn't know who Wim Hof or Joe Dispenza or Dave Asprey, you know, never heard of them. And through this conversation alone, they've got, you know, new information. So it's weird how that always works and how it always can be the same information said in a different light. So no, that's super important. I might have to ask you if you can send me those 12, because I've been working on that myself. And so I'd love to see those or have your help in some of that. And speaking of that, where can people find you? Where can people reach out to you? How can they join some of these programs? You know, what does that look like?
Yeah, social media, I'm most active on Instagram. So my handle is at Eddie Tony. So EDDYTONY. And then my website is very simple. Same thing, www.eddietony.com. And I post a lot of my events on social media. And then once you sign up for an event, you get added onto my mailing list. And that's where you get all the updates. But those are the two platforms that I use to connect with my audience. And people who are looking for my services through email and through Instagram. And even if they visit my website, whoever's listening, there's a lot of great, valuable content on there. I have free downloadables. There's three ebooks that I created. One is a holistic nutrition guide, holistic health guide. So different practices, healthy eating. And the last one I'm still creating, but the rough draft's already up. It's the 12 belief systems. It's about self-awareness. It's about self actualization, the power of our thoughts, shadow work. So there's a great information on there. But what I would recommend to anybody is experiential. So sign up for like a soul journey breathwork meditation, and they will get the experience. Because like you said just a few minutes ago, it's not about just saying or reading and feeding the intellectual mind. It's about embodiment and experience and feeling it in the body, in the cells. That's when it really sticks.
For sure. So true. Well, what would you leave people with, Eddie, if the people have made it this far, which I hope they have? This has been an amazing conversation. For the people that are going to be listening to this, what would you say as an ending note, whether it's people that are getting into psychedelics, whether it's people looking for personal transformation? What is kind of that one little tidbit of advice that you would give if, you know, you were to give your past self the same, you know, information?
Yeah. So I would say keep going and don't be dogmatic. There's a lot of information out there. Do the research and try it for yourself. Find reliable sources and coaches and mentors who have gone through, you know, their own personal challenges, their own dark night of the soul, so they can, you know, facilitate a cleaner path. So I feel like, you know, I'm that person, but there's many out there as well. Read a lot of books and just experiment. I now see life as a big experiment. I have connected with my inner child so much. And if I really look back, my inner child was this innocent, carefree, experimental, who gives a shit, you know? Yeah. And I feel like kids, they're just so imaginative and creative. And I have recently, the past couple of years, really connected with my inner child and just experiment without, you know, doing my best not to get down on myself if I slip up or I fail or I don't go down the wrong path or if I go down the wrong path. So life is a big experiment, and that's what really shifted for me.
I love that, man. And especially as a dad to and that has a young son, and that's, and the key word is imagination. And that's what I've really gotten fixated on the last few months is, you know, the imagination is like that third eye that we allude to. It's like that power source that almost gets siphoned out of a lot of us as we become adults. And, you know, what stopped us from looking at the floor as a lava pit versus, you know, just a few years. And now we just see it as a dirty floor that we need to mop and sweep, you know? And so that is key, man. I'm really glad you brought that up and ended with that, because, you know, for so much of our lives, we do take it way too seriously. And there is a lot of serious work that's involved, you know, and practices that you've outlined in this conversation. And at the same time, it is an experiment, is an experiment into yourself, an experiment into consciousness in general. And so it's something we really have to reclaim as adults. And I say it all the time, that as adults, we're undoing so much. And if we can do a better job of setting up our future, of, you know, bettering the ways we do things in our society and just in the things we can reach within ourselves, like even with me and my son, you know, I can contribute to his imagination. I can contribute to his soul developing in a way where those things stay with him forever, you know, and he can avoid some of the things that you and I and others have gone through. And that's the whole part of ancestors and learning and something we've really got disconnected from, at least in our modern, you know, Western society. We really need to pay attention to the things that are trying to be taught to us in the sense of helping better our lives in general. And again, man, just tapping into that imagination and that life force. I love that a lot.
Yes. Imagination, experimentation. And as we're doing it, I love repeating this mantra. It's the one I use the most. I relax, do my best, and see the beauty in my life.
I relax, do my best, and see the beauty in life.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm going to have to use that one. Because we get so caught up, right? We get in the loop. We get in the spiral and, you know, the Alice in Wonderland, never-ending hole.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guilty of it for sure. I get in my mind and we get in the monkey mind and it just spirals, you know? And so, yeah, I definitely agree. Well, this has been a great conversation. For everybody that is listening, I want to thank you for tuning in to another Pledge podcast. As I mentioned in previous episodes, we are a nonprofit. So if you're ever looking to help support us and to help keep this show going and to help, you know, keep the things going that we're doing here in the States and out of the country and providing people with psilocybin therapy, providing people with educational resources, and providing an outlet for conversations like these, whether it's financial or volunteer based, if you want to get involved, please reach out to us. And I want to thank you again for tuning in to another Pledge podcast episode. Really appreciate it, Eddie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Lee. It was such an honor to talk to you. And I look forward to hearing the podcast when it's out.
Definitely, brother.